Today's episode of the S&M Show is brought to you by Brush. Brush is an electric toothbrush that will change the way you think about brushing your teeth. With powerful sonic technology and ultra-gentle bristles, the Brush redefines what it means to have super clean teeth. It's like that feeling when you just leave the dentist, a fresh, whole mouth clean, except every single day. Our listeners get 15% off their total purchase with the code POD15. That's P-O-D-1-5. Follow the link in the show notes and enter the code POD15 to get your exclusive discount and upgrade your oral care routine.
In a world of uncertainty and despair,
you've been canceled.
Two heroes have reunited when they're needed the most.
Doing it for the money.
Live from the Pals for Life studios, it's the S&M Show. Here are your hosts, Shane Ryan and Mike Bowers.
Good evening, Canada. It is 5:02 Pacific time, 8:02 Eastern, sometime in the United Kingdom. Welcome to the S&M Show. As always, he is Shane and I am Mike. That has not changed. The only thing that has changed is the week. How are you today, sir?
I am hanging in there, my friend. It is one of those things where it's like, how are we doing? But we talk like four times a day, so I know exactly how you're doing, and I'm really looking forward to getting into that because I know you had had some recent struggles since we talked last week.
I am so incredibly angry over the last few days. So here's the thing. My wife is still out of town. Amanda's still back on the East Coast. Comes back on Sunday. That's cool. So in the meantime, I've been batching it up, doing things to myself. One of those things has slowly been returning to the office, working from campus while we gradually transition back to the concept of working in person again.
How many days they got you going in now?
They leave it up to us, so I'm doing between like 2 and 3 right now, particularly because I have a new person on board, so I'm getting her trained and everything. But you know, when you go to work, it helps to bring a lunch. Obviously, I'm not good at remembering that right now because it's been so long. You know, when you're used to working from home, you just walk down the hallway, get something out of the fridge, you're good. So I've been ordering a delivery the last couple times I've been in the office. So, and Shane obviously knows all of this because we've been chatting about it. But on Wednesday, I guess yesterday, I ordered I got a pizza delivered, one of those mod pizzas where, you know, little pizza, get infinite toppings, you're good. So first, the delivery person has no idea where he's going. You can follow him on the map. It's going all over the place. I tried to be as specific as possible that I am, you know, on campus in this hall. Even today, I added in like crossroads and what it's across from and all that. But they got lost for a while. I always wait outside because I'm hoping if they drive by and see somebody standing by in front of a building that they will assume that it's me and stop. Well, first delivery guy, he catches me at the last minute. I think I waved at him or something. So he stops at a four-way stop. Nobody's there, whatever, fine. He gets out. He's got the pizza in one of those in the cooler bags the DoorDash provides. And it didn't click in the moment, but he pulls out the pizza, he hands it to me sideways. So as if he's handing me a library book. So it's, you know, it's a regular pizza box. He's handing it to me like he's handing me a folder or a book or something. So I didn't think anything in the moment, and then as I started to walk away, I was like, oh crap. This is gonna be bad. I cannot imagine what it's going to look like when I open this box. So when I opened it up, sure enough, it was the most disturbing thing I've seen in quite a while. It was like everything had just kind of congregated over to one side. Toppings were everywhere, stuck to the top of the box. I know you know Jabba the Hutt from Star Wars. This was Pizza the Hutt. It looked kind of like that. So,
no, it's Pizza the Hut from Spaceballs, my friend.
Oh, that too. Okay,
that was the reference I was making earlier. In my Mount Rushmore of movies, which
that makes more sense.
Would be proud.
Okay, that makes more sense. I was on a Star Wars kick, but obviously. Okay, we're good. So it was Pizza the Hut. So I complained. They gave me, they refunded it. They gave me a bonus credit on top of that. Fine. I got to eat dinner last night with the credit. Cool. So then today I had an entire morning of meetings and then like a slight break before doing some other stuff in the afternoon before coming home. So I was trying to get some coffee delivered because I wasn't going to have a chance to go out and get something. So I tried DoorDash again. Same instructions. And I got the notice they were closed, so I went outside and waited. And then I was talking to a couple maintenance guys that I was catching up with. And then all of a sudden I look down and it says it's been delivered. Please check the photo for proof of delivery. And I open up the photo, and they delivered it not just like a building over, but like four or five blocks away, on the other side of a busy street. They left it in front of what an abandoned business.
So they put it like down on the doorstep and took a picture of it like Amazon on your doorstep style?
Exactly. Like nice. you could tell just from the there used to be a business there. It's closed down because we're tearing down the building, but I mean, there was no sign of people anywhere there, and they just left it there like, all right, I guess that's it. Here we go. And I'm like, context clues, people. So I tried contacting the person. I said, you delivered it to the wrong place. They never responded. Complained again, got another refund. And at this point, it's lunchtime. I'm like, all right, let's try this again. Because for some reason, I was determined I wanted that Mod Pizza.
And it's the same pizza place every time, right?
Same pizza place. So I tried it again. They got lost for a while. Like, they drove by the intersection where my building was, where I'm standing outside. They drove down the street, like, 7 to 10 blocks away, took a turn. They eventually figured it out, came back. I think they saw me. Fine. So I'm watching, like, how are they going to hand me this? How are they going to hand me this? This time, everything was bagged up. They hand it to me flat. I'm like, okay, this is a good sign. We're in a good spot.
Two for three. We got two for three. We got the delivery confirmed, and the method was correct. So we, you know.
Let's see how it goes. So then I get in. I sit down at the, my desk, and I open the box. And I guess it got damaged in transit because there it was again. Everything off to the side.
Nice sloppy mess.
Yeah. So here I am again on DoorDash support chatting with somebody that I just chatted with literally 30 minutes prior about another order. And like, come on, man, this is the third consecutive order that
you got to be flagged in the system by now.
That's what I'm afraid of, that they do stuff like Amazon where if you return things so many times that they ban you without notice.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like, that's why I tried to be clear when I'm talking to him. Like, this isn't the third time in a row. This is getting ridiculous. Can you help me out here? And, you know, it's your boilerplate. Sorry about this. You know, well, we appreciate your patience. Here's a refund and a bonus credit. So, going to try again tonight.
I was going to say, you're going to do it again? You're going to go after you are determined to get this, like, perfect pizza?
It won't be pizza. Out here, it's fine. At home, it's fine. It's just when it's at work. So,
gotcha.
On wood, I think I'll be okay.
Did you eat it each time, or did you just kind of let it sit there as a sloppy mess?
I ate it, but it was... Let's just say I'm glad I'm not meeting with people in person yet, because...
Gotcha.
You're digging your hands into this pile of cheese and...
Which is funny because you don't want that as your dinner. And then I sent you a picture of my dinner and it looks like that by design because that's what I was eating.
Wait, that's what you actually had?
Yeah. So it's a delicacy in the Rochester area and it's legitimately called a garbage plate. So if you want a good, you know, laugh or whatever, Jim Gaffigan came up here before the world shut down. And he put on Twitter, like, hey, what should I eat? And, of course, everybody in Rochester is like, you have to get a garbage plate. So he's been on, like, TV doing skits about this, but it literally is a heart attack on a plate. So the gist of it is a plate with half of it some sort of potato or fries. So depending upon where you go, some places up here do traditional fries, some do waffles, some do tater tots. You know, the proper way of doing that is up for very much debate. Then you put macaroni salad on there.
Oh my god. On one plate. Oh my god.
Then on top of that, you can go a little bit crazy. You can either do a hamburger, cheeseburger, or you could do a hot dog. But up here, there's multiple choices of kind of hot dogs. We go by hots. So we have red hots, which are kind of like your traditional hot dog, or we have these things called white hots, which are these white hot dogs, which are amazing. Or you can get even more crazy like I typically do and go one of each. So I usually go like the cheeseburger and then the white hot. Put that on top of that. Then on top of that, you put this like meat sauce, and it's like a hot meat sauce. It's like a hot sauce with some with actual brown ground beef in it. And so it's just delicious and spicy. Then on top of that, you top it with diced onions and then go back and forth with ketchup and mustard. And then you have your garbage plate. It is the world's greatest hangover food, my friend. It is like the one thing that I was like, other than Wegmans, that brought me back to Rochester. And it's by design, we have that. And that's literally what it's called, is a garbage plate, because that's what it looks like. You just throw literally something on the garbage on there. So you for you, it was a travesty. For me, it was delightful.
Man, that is, I don't even want to call that an acquired taste, because that's not a taste I would want to acquire.
Until you actually acquire it, and then you realize, I have not lived until now.
Just don't, I couldn't bring myself to it. It's like,
when we do this, these home and home series we're talking about, like actually getting back to there, I will eat your jacked up sideways pizzas, and you can eat my garbage plate.
But see, that's different though. Yours is by design, and mine was a screw up.
Get some soul food in Shasta, whatever you want to do, my friend.
Oh my god, that was a screw up too. Come on. We'll drive up to Canada and we'll go see Dave and we'll go get some poutine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Some fresh frozen gravy, please.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, sorry. That'll be fun.
Chug maple syrup, it'll be a blasty.
Yeah, it'd be great. Oh man. So yeah, it's been a week. So anyway, we're here as we are every week because A, we need things to do, but B, we got the boy band tournament. So before we dive into the fourth and final region of the tournament, do we want to go over last week's results from across the pond?
I think we should. We had some that were surprising, some that were a little close, and let's see if some trends continue from week two.
Yeah, so let's get to it. Let me open up the bracket here. This was by far the most active region as far as upsets and that sort of thing. So 1-16 matchup, What Makes You Beautiful versus Sabete Amimoto. No surprise there. One Direction finally gets a win as the number one
technically
seed.
Technically, that is a surprise.
Yeah, I guess so. They finally won, so they're heading to the round of 32. First upset of the bracket, bump, 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 because of you. Not a huge upset because it's the 8-9, but 98 Degrees because of you takes the win fairly easily over B2K. 5-12 on Bended Knee versus The Hardest Thing. Again, 98 Degrees pointed out with The Hardest Thing. And this one wasn't relatively close.
So I was very surprised on the results of that one.
Oh, excuse me. I'm looking at two different songs here. Maybe let me back up. Unbended Knee beat Where's the Love by Hanson. And The Hardest Thing. Here's our other upset here. The Hardest Thing beat Dynamite, BTS.
That's the one.
Very convincingly. So those two are going to be facing off in the round of 32. It's going to be me versus It's Hard to Say Goodbye. Finally, Boys to Men took a defeat here fairly closely. But it's going to be me. NSYNC heads on to round number two. I Want to Sex You Up, Kenny's pick to win it all, won pretty lopsidedly over Can You Stand the Rain. And then we head down to our last two matchups. Some big news here. Candy Girl and Pop. This was some back and forth. In the end, Candy Girl takes it by one vote.
So remember, I didn't cheat.
Remember, every vote counts here. So Candy Girl takes it by one vote.
Yes.
This is why you need to vote. Candy Girl holds
that made
on.
My
as,
night.
Yes, Candy Girl takes it as the 7 seed over the 10 seed Pop. So remember, every vote counts in these parts. And then finally, the 2-15 matchup. 2 seed, back for good, against the 15 seed, please don't go, girl. For the third week in a row, the 15 seed takes it. And again, not even close. Please don't go, girl takes it with 75% of the vote. Amazing. So there we go. I think that's 4 upsets in this region. So half of the matchups, the lower seed won. Pretty remarkable, isn't it?
It is. I was a little sad for this 15-2 matchup for the upset, because I do like Back for Good as a song. Did not think it was going to make much of a run if it did go on, but I was up against a really tough one with a crowd favorite for some of our generational listeners. So, but the Candy Girl, my last minute plea. I'm glad that it worked.
Yeah, it's one vote. So, you know, it's in our tournaments, in our elections, every single vote matters. And that's why if you were the person who was going to vote for Pop and decided it wasn't worth it, you caused them to lose. So shame on you.
Or thank you.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for us, because that's what we wanted to have happen, but you get the idea. So, okay, so there we go. London region, done. We're going to transition into our second matchup of the night. Does that sound good for everyone? All right, yeah, okay, let's get excited. Let's do it. So
They approve.
Yeah, sounds like the audience approved. So we're going to get into the 8-9 matchup, which is one of the, it's probably my favorite matchup of the night. We have the 8 seed All for Love by Color Me Bad versus the 9 seed I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. So 8 seed All for Love. It was their 3rd single from their debut album. Reached number 1 in 1992, knocking off quite the titan Black or White by Michael Jackson. And it was also the group's 2nd and final number 1 hit. Now, again, I could offer more analysis. I could probably speak for this for days. Shane could probably speak for it for days. We could get Kenny in here, and he could speak for it for months.
It is on my Mount Rushmore.
Yes. But rather than do that, why don't we just have Brian Abrams from Color Me Bad tell you about it himself?
Yo, Mike and Shane, it's Brian Abrams, former lead vocalist of Color Me Bad. Big shout out to the podcast. I am really excited to find out who wins. I'm curious myself. You asked me a question, what I thought about the whole recording process with All for Love. It was a lot of fun. I can remember we were in the studio with Howie T. And I remember being ecstatic, for one, because we wrote the song. And so we were given, you know, writers permission to write a lot of the songs on our first album because of the success of Sex You Up and the collaboration between us and Spider-Man and Freeze. But the biggest thing for me was singing doo-wop harmonies in a hip-hop song, because a lot of people don't know it, but I coined the term hip-hop doo-wop. We used to sing a lot of doo-wop harmonies, the old school 50s and 60s songs, and we always wanted to figure out a way to incorporate it into our music when we started putting records out. And Howie T was like the perfect fit for that, because he was into that same old school stuff, and he would like sample the loops. And just the whole thing that he put together for All for Love was amazing. And we were just excited to be able to continue to do what we love to do, which was harmonize and do all that hip-hop doo-wop stuff. So I hope that was some good information for you guys. Big shout out to the podcast again. And may the best man win, best group, best boy band win. And also a big shout out to Kenny. What up, Kenny? Take care and talk to you soon.
Yeah, that's some first-hand analysis from Brian Abrams himself. I sincerely hope that they get back together at some point, that Brian gets to rejoin the group, because it's just not the same without him.
He did say some cool things were brewing, so, I mean, we were trying to get him to come on, too, and hopefully he'll come on and talk about him when he can, so we'll see. He seemed interested.
He expressed interest in coming on once his current projects are complete and announced, so... We'll see what happens there, but thank you, Brian, for offering that that insight into All for Love. Now they are up against the 9 seed, I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. This was the lead single from their second album, which was appropriately titled 2, and was written by Babyface. That's a nice little songwriter to have. It actually spent 14 weeks as a number one hit and went platinum in the U.S. At the time, I believe it was the longest reigning, or had the longest tenure at the number one spot. And it was
close. It had quite a run. I couldn't verify, but I think it was close.
Yeah, and I think still to this point, it's one of the better runs at number one. And it was also ranked as the third best song of the decade and number 22 of all time by Billboard magazine. Now, again, that's the basic analysis. We could go into more depth, but considering we had Brian Abrams talk about All for Love, we don't want to put that song at an unfair advantage or put Boyz II Men at a disadvantage. So, Sean Stockman of Boyz II Men, take it away.
What's up, Mike and Shane? This is Sean Stockman, and I am here to answer your podcast question for me to talk about I'll Make Love to You. Well, you know what's funny about that song? The guys and I at first didn't want to do it. We didn't want to do the song because we were just coming off the success of End of the Road, and we were working on our 2 album, and Babyface came to us with this song in Atlanta, Georgia, and we listened to it, and we thought it was really nice, but to us, it sounded too much like End of the Road, so we didn't want to do it, and we told our then-president, Gerald Busby, that we didn't want to do it, and we got into this big argument, and he ended up hanging up on us and told us not only were we going to do it, that it was going to be the first single, and the whole thing. So thank God for Mr. Busby, because he was absolutely correct. And we were absolutely wrong. And if we didn't do that song, we wouldn't have broken the record for longest number one, in history, in Billboard history. So, and it turns out that it's one of our biggest records and one of my favorite songs, believe it or not. Because it's a very special song to perform for people. And we get a chance to connect with the crowd by giving the ladies roses and, them loving the song, hopefully even more after that. So that's I'll Make Love to You, man. It's a great song. It's a great, great song. Greater than we even expected. And thank you and people like you who've supported it and loved it for so long. I truly appreciate it. And take care.
Well, there we go. Some expert analysis from Sean Stockman of Boyz II Men himself. So
it's been funny getting to peel behind the curtain a little bit and see like some of these things. Like some of the artists we've talked to, like they fought their label on things and they were successful. Other ones were like, no, we don't want to do this, lost out, and then it became uber successful. So it's neat to see how that actually worked out, and that, it's funny that they didn't want to do that. It became possibly their most notable hit.
Today's episode of the S&M Show is brought to you by Bruche. Bruche is an electric toothbrush that will change the way you think about brushing your teeth. With powerful sonic technology and ultra-gentle bristles, the Bruche redefines what it means to have super clean teeth. It's like that feeling when you just leave the dentist a fresh, whole mouth clean, except every single day. Our listeners get 15% off their total purchase with the code POD15. That's POD15. Follow the link in the show notes and enter the code POD15 to get your exclusive discount and upgrade your oral care routine. It is time to cancel some things with our favorite segment of the week.
It's that time for Shane and Mike to cancel things that they don't like. Cancel Corner.
Cancel there Corner. It is. Where we take aim at the cancel culture supposedly happening around the world and responding to it by canceling even more things. Shane, who do you got this week?
So first up, I got, as the world starts to open back up and as we start to go back into public and do things such as go to grocery stores, so do the assholes who decided to use their speakerphone functions for both not only music or speakerphone calls while they are shopping.
No! So
this week, I am canceling those folks. I get it if you were like, oh man, I need my wife's verification to buy this and I got to FaceTime you real quick to show something. But I'm talking about the people who just, And I know it looks really dumb when you have those one-ear Bluetooth things in or your headphones in and talking, but I can't stand the people who are just walking around the grocery store blasting the music that they like in right in front of everybody, or just talking on speakerphone to whatever cousin they're talking to with seven kids in the background just screaming and yelling while I'm trying to look for my condiments. So I'm not a fan of that. Like, there's a reason why you have headphones. There's a reason why you have a phone feature. I don't need to hear your conversations, nor most of the time when you're playing music, it's music that's not appropriate to be played in Walmart anyway. Yeah. But that's what people do. So this week, I'm canceling those folks who are too lazy to invest in headphones or keep that shit to themselves.
You've been canceled.
All right, I'm going to start this week by canceling school zones. Specifically, okay. Hear me out. Specifically, the school zone speed camera enforcement. So, I'm sure this is the case in a lot of places, but out here in Washington especially, we have a lot of speed zones that have the radar and then camera enforcement. So, if you go through a school zone and you're going above the speed limit, you get to a certain point, you're clocked on stationary radar, then there's a camera in the back that takes a picture of your plate, and however many weeks later, you get a ticket in the mail. So a couple issues that I have with that. One is the whole, how to put this? I guess my biggest issue with it is that the whole process is set up to be a cash grab. Because the way they set it up, they have the sign and then the radar and the camera. Okay. That's not far enough apart to where you could reasonably slow down in time to not get a ticket. So, like,
is it a drastic difference?
In a couple places, it is. There's a few notable places out here. One of them's closer to where I live. There's a couple in Seattle or the greater Seattle area. I think Shoreline's one. But it's so close together that because it drops from like 40 or 35 down to 20. And based on the amount of distance you have between the sign and the radar, in order to get under that speed, if you're going close to 35 or 40, you're basically having to slam on your brakes. I believe the Seattle Times did an article on it at one point where one of them in particular, it was like 76 feet between when the sign becomes visible in enforcement. And when you're driving a car that's, 10, 11 feet long going 35 miles an hour, that does not leave a lot of time for that. But the other piece is that it's a crock, because a couple of years ago, right before we started doing the COVID song and dance, I got a ticket for driving too fast in a school zone. And the ticket shows up in the mail. It's processed out of Phoenix, Arizona, first of all. That's my first complaint, is that it's not a police officer in Linwood, Washington that's processing this. It's somebody in Phoenix. So not even close to where I'm at. So they send the ticket, and they know it's a crock, because it's not an actual ticket. It's basically the equivalent of a parking ticket. So if you don't contest it, or if you do contest and it's upheld, you don't get any points on your driver's license. There's no record of it ever. It's just essentially as if you parked in the wrong space. It's that type of enforcement. Okay. But you can contest it, and I did. And I remember I wrote this very detailed, essentially what looked like a legal brief, where I'm like, here's the state law that shows how school zones are supposed to be constructed. It specifies how the signs are supposed to be constructed. Like, it has to have certain language.
Okay.
And it didn't have any of that. So I'm like, your signs say this. Your state law says it has to be this. Therefore, hard to comply with the state law if you're not complying with it. No. That's why it's a crock. Because they
got a letter from Phoenix saying,
"No, then it actually, no, then it actually goes to the local court. Like, an actual judge has to sit in on this." And like I said, I raised all these arguments in there, And he writes back on the appeal slip, like, it's a little triplicate form, and all he writes is, he reduced it from $250 to $100. But all he said was, no children were in the area, was speeding through the school zone. It's like, that wasn't my argument. My argument was this, and you just ignored it and said, well, there weren't any kids around, so we'll cut it to $100. So, I was thinking about that today as I was driving through a school zone. Making sure I was driving like 10 miles an hour so I didn't get another ticket.
Right.
But anyway, school zones are a crock. I hate them. It's a money grab to fund the police departments. Fund them appropriately, raise taxes, whatever you have to do. Stop school zones or cancel.
You've been canceled.
Do school zones exist when kids are at home doing online learning?
No, they don't. But we just went back.
Yeah, we don't have that stuff around by us because we're not that close to Bezos.
Oh, gotcha. All right, what you got?
All right, I am canceling all these fines this week. And the reason why I'm canceling all these fines is because those who know me know that I love Aldi's. Aldi's has become like my second love, probably because I was in D.C. and I was poor and I worked in higher education and couldn't afford anything else but Aldi's. But then it also forced me to go to Aldi's, which forced me to then love Aldi's and then forced me to love Aldi's fines. The problem I have with Aldi's fines is that in COVID and during normal times, all these fines were great. You go there at a reasonable time in the beginning of the week. You could find whatever you want. Now you have to go there like right at the beginning because of the supply chain problems that are going through COVID. There's very limited amount of all these fines that you want. So if you see something you like, it's kind of like, and those of you who are not familiar with Aldi's, it's a great, cheap grocery store that's based out of Germany that does a lot of organic stuff, and then they have this aisle of adult toys goods that it's like all useful adult crap at severe discounted rates that I love, and then also kids stuff that my daughters love.
Can I cut you off real quick?
Yeah.
When you say adult products, what do you mean?
Not weirdly adult products, but like things like hammers, workbenches, all these like super useful adult like things that you need these days that, like, you don't want to go to Home Depot and spend a crap ton on, so you can go there and buy them. Or there's, like, workout gear. You name it. It's amazing. It's there. It's cheap. And it's pretty decent quality stuff. The problem is, though, in the COVID supply chain problem, is that there's very limited quantities. So, like, you now have to get there when the store opens and be one of those people that are there, like, 15 minutes ahead in line doing it. Which, not a big problem if that supply chain gets there, and it's usually supposed to be on a Sunday. But my daughter really, really wants this, like, saucer-shaped swing that, you know, most other places, it's like $100, Amazon, you know, wherever you can get it. Aldi's has it for $39.99, and it was supposed to be in store on Sunday. It didn't come in on Sunday. But I got there at 9:45. My wife and I went to two different stores on Sunday to make sure that we got there, and neither of them got it. I've then subsequently gone every day this week, because supposedly they get trucks every day this week, to go at the time of it starts to try to see if we can get this because she really wants it. And it's now Thursday, and it still has not come in, let alone I will probably go tomorrow on Friday and continue the cycle and Saturday to see what happens because my daughter wants this. But that is why I'm canceling it, because I'm obsessed with all these fines. I love all these fines, but they're driving me crazy with this supply chain demand and inconsistencies. So for that, I am canceling them this week.
You've been canceled.
I'm still envisioning this whole rack of, if you walk in and it's the Aldi fines and you have like a section of dildos and fleshlights.
it's not like Adam and Eve stores. It's just adult trinkets.
We got the pleasure products from the porn stars that have since retired. So have your fleshlight at a discounted rate.
Facebook Marketplace, it's used.
God. All right, so the last one I have for this week are social media doctors. And I realize I'm going to get into a little bit of trouble here probably, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so, I mean, this was a thing before COVID, but obviously it's intensified since then. You have these folks that have opinions on medical issues.
Yep.
And their rationale for taking the which usually the opposite to the mainstream approach is, I've done a ton of research on this topic, and I just have lots of questions. A couple problems. First of all, you did not do research. You read some things. You watched a video or two on YouTube from a guy that probably read some things. You did not do research. You didn't conduct a study. You didn't have double blind. You didn't have a peer reviewed thing. None of that. You read some things and interpreted things probably pretty poorly on both accounts. I have there's somebody I know. It's a friend of a family member, and he's gotten really big recently for his COVID denial and anti-COVID vaccine videos. And they're very well put together, like high production value. The person's very charismatic, so it comes off really well. But there's just all this stuff. And one of his first anti-vax videos he put out, he said just this absurd stuff about how the vaccine was going to change your DNA and it was going to cause women's uteruses to fall out and that sort of thing. But then after he posted it, he then posted a link to what he called the receipts. They were all the articles and studies and all these things that he supposedly read to make this video. Which,
okay.
On one hand, okay, at least you're citing your sources, supposedly. But here's the problem. Because I felt so strongly about this, I went and I read most of the articles that he cited. Particularly when it came to masks, because he's also very anti-mask, unsurprisingly, that masks cause your O2 levels to drop to dangerous levels, all that stuff that's been debunked before. So he had a whole section on anti-mask studies that prove that it's bad for you. And I remember reading every single one of those, and the first problem was they were incredibly specific circumstances that didn't apply to the general population, so what is the effect of mask usage on pregnant women in the late term of pregnancy? Or what is the effect of mask usage on people with kidney failure? Like, not just regular, normal, in fine health person walking around. But the other piece that got to me was every single article he cited, every single study he cited, had the same conclusion, which was, we need more information to draw a conclusion. So he cited all these articles that said, we don't know shit yet, and used that to draw these conclusions about the vaccine. And nice. I feel like more often than not, that is how it plays out. And just shut up.
What's the acronym that the kids are using these days? Too long, don't read.
TLDR.
That's what it is. It's like you get the information you want. Cite that as your fact, and then let's move on with it and not read the part where we don't have enough information yet, but this is just speculation.
Yeah, it's just maddening now, because particularly when you look at, like, the Southeast, for example, where vaccine numbers are still pretty low, you have folks that are, you have areas where cases are still going up because of that, as well as, you know, not doing other measures. And, you know, it might have been cute at one point in time, but people are going to die as a result of this stuff. So, you know, stick to what you know. You didn't go to medical school. You didn't study epidemiology. You don't know how any of this works. So do what you're good at and shut up and stop trying to be a doctor, because you're not. So social media doctors and professionals, you are canceled.
You've been canceled.
We're going to switch gears and go into our interview with Trevor from O-Town. You may have listened last week if you listened to the pod where they talked about the early days of the band. And we're going to pick it up where we're looking at more after the first album comes out and singles start dropping, as well as the breakup and the reunion and what they've been up to since then. So here's our interview with Trevor. We'll be back in a bit. You're listening to Pals for Life Radio, the S&M show. Stay tuned. O-Town has two different songs in the tournament, Liquid Dreams and All or Nothing. Obviously, Liquid Dreams was your first single as a group, performed pretty well commercially, and then All or Nothing, the second single, did better when it came to radio play, but didn't do as well commercially. Yet, All or Nothing seems to be the one that has the more lasting legacy as a group and is still pretty fondly remembered. Do you think that it was the right call to lead with Liquid Dreams?
Oh, yeah. I think Clive knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from that perspective, you know, like I said, we were the third boy band. He didn't want us to be, you know, you, me, you know, like he wanted us to have racier topics. So, I feel like he was out looking for like sexier type songs because he wanted us to lean a different way per se. Like we still have this image, but we were going to talk, you know, a little bit more adult about it, I guess, you know, sexier.
Didn't want another love ballad leaning off, basically.
He just kind of had, and then we have like Sexiest Woman Alive. Mm-hmm. Every 6 seconds, those a little bit, yeah, to where kids now say, oh my God, I can't believe my parents listened to that. Let me listen to that when I was 13. You don't say that about any Backstreet Boys or NSYNC songs, you know,
right?
Not any of their earlier songs, you know?
Yeah, makes sense.
So I think it was a calculated decision. And so, when he played us All or Nothing, we were like, We get to sing that.
Yeah, still a good song.
I don't forget that moment, man. We were in his office and it was just piano and the demo singer. And we were like, okay, like, oh my God. I mean, we didn't know that it was going to be what it was, but we knew that we loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only talking to you right now because of that song.
Yeah. What was your reaction when you heard the key change in All or Nothing?
Oh, that was we were all like classic key change, you know, like,
yeah,
that makes a ballad. I mean, that takes it over the top. I mean,
yeah.
And it's got the drunk, is it? I mean, it's everything you asked for. And like that bard sing along key change love song. That's, you know, it's crazy. I love it.
Yeah.
I love seeing videos of like younger people singing it, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
That's cool. So settle something for us here. we've been looking over Liquid Dreams and all the women mentioned and everything. We haven't been able to get, though we have suspicions on who the Jennifer in question is.
Yeah.
Is it Lopez?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's,
we assume so. Yeah, it still holds true.
And then again, off of that, there is an all-star cast mentioned in there. So there's Destiny's Child, Madonna, Janet Jackson, now defined Jennifer Lopez officially, Angelina Jolie, Cindy Crawford, Selma Hayek, Halle Berry. Who is the GOAT out of that whole group?
Man, that's tough. Those are tons of icons, man. You got Janet in there. A lot of
firepower.
You got Madonna in there. You got Beyonce in there. I mean, that is it. I will leave that up to the fans. Tweet your answers. Who is the GOAT? That's less defined than Tom Brady being the GOAT.
Right.
I think Tom Brady's more of the GOAT than we could find in there. That's like,
and to think the Beyonce, when Destiny's Child was mentioned, that this was, you know, way before she blew up into what she was now.
It was Queen B.
Yeah.
Queen B. What a perfect nickname, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you guys split in 2003 to pursue some solo careers. Can you talk about your experience as far as what you did during that break?
The first beginning of the break, mm-hmm, none of us really did anything because we were so nonstop for, you know, 4 straight years.
Right.
You know, we only were getting like 4 days off a year for Christmas, you know, like,
wow.
It's crazy. So it's like when you know, we decided to split up, it's like, okay, let's just, well, but you know, we'll be back. We'll be back. Like, let's just, you know, spread, you know, a little bit. So you take whatever time, you don't do anything, you know, and then, you know, it's like, okay, are we not going to do anything? All right. So I think maybe I got to get a job, you know, like, all right. So, you know, do that. I moved to LA, started taking acting class. you know, started honing in on that craft because I knew that was something that I would want to do and obviously will do and continue to try to pursue. So I did that for pretty much the entire time, which was great. That helped a deal with, you know, just for what I want to do in the future. And then, yeah, I pretty much just did that. I mean, I did some shooting and I didn't do anything crazy. I did a couple like little indie films and I wrote a bunch of songs. Mm-hmm. I wrote a bunch of songs that I actually like kind of am remaking and like tweaking. I kind of, if it's on my page, if you follow me on Patreon, I like deliver my patrons all the like old songs, all the things, because I'm planning on releasing an album this year.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, solo. Yeah. So, So a lot of the stuff I was doing in there when it just wasn't ready, I wasn't quite there yet. I wasn't ready yet. I wasn't ready to really do it on my own yet. I didn't have the real confidence that I needed. Like, yeah, but I gained that. I did a lot of karaoke, which helped with a ton of stuff. If you want to perform, go tell your friends, do karaoke. That's how you feed that muscle. That's how you feed feed it with that. Learn how to mic control, all kinds of stuff still.
Yeah. I mean,
it's fun. Yeah. So yeah, and then we got back together. That was amazing.
What went into the conversations and getting you all back together? Like how did that come about? Talk us through that process, because that was actually segued right into our next question, which is great. Yeah. So
Jacob sent out like a tweet. You know, he said like, "Oh, O-Town reunion." It was like 2013, like towards the end of 2013. Like, O-Town reunion, and like some people kind of picked it up, and then like, you know, Perez Hilton tweeted about it. Like, you know, a bunch of people started like kind of picking up in pop culture and like little things. We're like, "Oh, okay." Like, it's kind of getting like a little bit of buzz. Like. But, you know, then we talked to Ashley, you know, and Ashley respectfully declined, you know, so it was like, okay, well, now what? And then we had someone from the UK reach out and tell us that he had someone that, you know, would sign us, was interested in like signing us and would do it without Ashley. Like, so we had someone that was, you know, we had like a label that was going to come to the table. So that kind of really spearheaded everything. Like that's when it became real. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, then we were like, recorded Skydive. And then we were like, oh, that's pretty good. Like, maybe we should, you know, maybe do more. And then guys started writing and we kind of started, you know, just kind of snowballed from there. It was just going to be like a little European tour, like one summer, like three or four shows. And like, that was it. And then just like, once we announced, it became like, you know, got grounds. It's been good, man. We've built a little thing. Like, it started much smaller than it has been now, and it's like, it feels really good as a band, just because of the way we did it this time. Like, it was like on our terms, as opposed to the way it was last time. You know, we do design, we do all the stage show, we do the choreography, we do all the writing, we do everything, we make every decision, and so. And like to see it when you go out on tour and you see the fans screaming and you see them coming backstage and like, you know, they're getting the VIPs and they're, you know, once again, they're there and they're screaming and it's, you know, it's like, it's crazy, man. So happy. So blessed. So glad it's back.
Yeah. So as we start to come out of the pandemic and places are starting to open back up again, what's next for you guys?
Man, tour, shows. Keep staying tuned. We have some stuff we got a ton of shows coming. We gotta keep, you know, we gotta wait a little bit to start, you know, announcing all of them because we got this regulation and stuff. We gotta see where we're at, see exactly what's going on. But it's looking really good. We'll be in a city near you. Where are you guys at? Where are you guys located?
He's in Rochester, New York. I'm just outside Seattle.
Okay. Yeah, I think we'll be up in the New York area for sure. I think north. I don't know.
Buffalo or Canada. I'm pretty much Canada. So anything.
Okay. Anything's close. I mean, I can't wait till we get to go back to Canada, man. Jeez, that's like our favorite. We love going there. We love going to Toronto for sure. That's definitely our spot.
Toronto's a great place. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that border opening back up at some point too.
Yeah. And the PNW, you know, we love the PNW. I love the PNW. It's so pretty up there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's great up there. Fishermen, you know, I love how everything falls down into the, you know, all the streets like slant.
Yeah.
The market, you know, I love
that. Yeah.
I love that. Like you can see at the top of the, you know, if you go up in your top, you can see down. That's in like the city of Seattle, right?
But
the drive is like seeing Mount Rainier. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, that's, oh my. It's so big.
That's when you know it's going to be a good day, when you're on the interstate and you can actually see Rainier. Like, okay, the sun is out. I can see Rainier. It's going to be a good day.
Is that what it is? I love it.
Yeah, we have a very low bar for what's going to be a good day out here. So.
For us, it's not snowing. It's a good day. So that's what we get. So I mean, anything you want to plug personally that you're doing? Obviously the tour is coming up, but are you doing anything from music wise, acting wise, anything you want to push to listeners?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, I'm going to be releasing music this year at some point. I'm just dotting my I's and crossing some T's, man, and just trying to decide how many songs, how, just kind of see who's going to help me release them, you know, what I'm just kind of figuring out the last couple of things, but yeah, for sure. I'm doing a ton of writing and and definitely acting. I'm in the very beginning stages of like writing a movie. So we'll see what happens.
Nice.
Yeah. Good luck with that. That's amazing.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Shane, you want to hit him with the closer?
Yeah, so I always try to surprise everyone with this because we're trying to come up with a really cool playlist at the end. So we've had a couple really, really neat guests come on before, and I like to ask them, and I know it's a loaded question, and it's a surprise question, but what are your four favorite songs? And I know it's hard to maybe narrow down to four, but are there ones that have been the most influential to you or speak to you that you would like to share? Man.
Okay, that's like, okay.
We like doing Mount Rushmores. That's the type of like style we're going for.
Like you said, that's a tough question. So I'd have to base that around four achievements or moments in my life that are important to me. Mm-hmm. And I have to think about a song that relates to that moment. I might have to think for a minute.
No problem.
Man, that is a crazy question. Like, how do you say that you love a song more than something you do that you know?
I think every time we talk about it, I change my four. So we won't hold anybody against it.
But I mean, I would even try to break it down and say, oh, decades. Like, oh, what's my favorite song of the 90s? Or my favorite song of the 80s? You know, because I mean, music's my life, man. So that's a really hard question. I've loved music since I could listen to it, I'll say On Bended Knee, Boyz II Men, just because Boyz II Men was such a humongous influence, and when their music peaked was when I was like, that was, you know, I was 14, 13, girls starting to sing those types of songs, and like, you know, everyone wanted to be you on yay. You know, like, and that song, I just kind of was like it for me. I don't know. Or was it It's So Hard to Say Goodbye? I don't know. Just those songs, I think, count as one.
Yeah.
You know, goodness gracious. This is really hard. I'm trying to think of what hip hop song was like the most influential. And I mean, oh, man. Jeez, I can't. What's your list? I needed time for this question. Sorry.
Jane?
See, my list would be.
I mean, you're gonna be editing this video, yes?
Oh yeah, yeah, we'll be.
And okay, I'm gonna start thinking.
Yeah, so I'm probably looking at I'm trying to think ones that are like, you know, sentimental to my life where I'm at. So I think OAR, Crazy Game of Poker. That was right around high school. That was one of the ones where like we'd hang out all the time, listen. Yeah. Probably got to go with, this will be a sellout one to my wife, but Brad Paisley, She's Beautiful. That's the one that, it's our wedding song. So I got to go with that one.
Yeah.
And then let's see. So I got to go probably go a little different. So it's two genres that I wanted. I'll probably go, I really like Zac Brown Band and Amos Lee, Day I Die is probably one of my top songs. And then the other one I really like that, I mean, I was probably going to go, I probably should go a hip hop song. Cause I do have a lot of like hip hop 90s rap that I like, but, I think Lying in Our Graves, Dave Matthews is probably one of my top songs as well.
Yeah. See, I love
it. But it changes in the moods I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, that's literally a question I cannot answer. I mean, I just start listing songs. I can't think of that. I don't know. I mean, you said Dave Matthews, that's a ton of those, you know. Bone Thugs and Harmony was such a huge influence. I mean, Kanye's like earlier Kanye. not that later Kanye was bad. I just, the earlier Kanye really got me.
It's very different styles for sure. Very different styles for sure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Michael. It's like, what Michael song do you pick? You know, what Prince song do you pick? Like, Little Red Corvette is my jam. Little Red Corvette is like, that's my ish right there. I mean, LL, I Need Love. That song, when I was little, that was one of the first songs I wrote and learned all the words to. I love that song. When I'm Alone in My Room, that song was so good. God, that song was a jam. I mean, Casey and JoJo, All My Life.
Good choice.
These are just like, this top of my head, man. If I Ever Fall in Love, Shy. I get like four from each genre.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to. I know it's a loaded question when we ask it, but it's like, but this is great because we get awesome playlists that we get to build. So
it just makes me think of like all the music I love. You know, like it's crazy. I'm just thinking. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's great. You're good. Now we'll leave it at that. I think that's a good list to start or to pull from. So.
I just love music. It's always like, what's your favorite song at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I always have a couple songs on my, you know, like right now, my favorite song is Dua Lipa, We're Good. Like, that's my favorite song right now. That, and I just found this gem of a song. Gem. Oh, so it's called Recap. By Keto Van Ness. Yep. And I heard this guy named Ty Verdes. Don't know who that is, but he's got a great song I love right now. That's an easier question.
That works. All right. Well, Trevor, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Always a pleasure. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks so much.
Hey, good luck with everything coming up. It sounds like you got a lot going on. So we'll be following, we'll be pulling for you. And let us know if we can help in any way.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, you're welcome, guys.
See you, Trevor.
Well, one round is in the books. Just a couple more to go.
It's been a journey. Been some interesting matchups. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it was a little bit of a wild card with the formula. I mean, the formula was great, but I mean, it made for some chaos in the first round, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And so it's gonna be interesting to see what moves forward, and then every song that moves forward is a juggernaut. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So the plan for the next couple weeks, next week, we're gonna dive into both Orlando and Boston for their second round matchups. So it'll look probably the same as it has been right now as far as length and whatnot. And then obviously the week after that, we'll go to London and Gary. With those next two shows, we're going to air both parts of our interview with Richie Neville, one of the members of Five. We're going to talk about the journey to forming the group as part of a national audition process, the what it was like being in the group in its early days with some really absurd travel schedules and whatnot. Paying attention to the signs as far as when it was time to take a break, as far as what brought them back together. And they continue to get ready to tour, albeit as a smaller group, to this day. So really good stuff. We really enjoyed talking to him.
And the Wikipedia sucks.
Yeah. Don't listen to Wikipedia for everything, we found out. Should have listened to our college professors. But here we are at the end of the show. And you know what that means. It's time for our second, or I guess our 1A and 1B segment of the week.
It's time for the douchebag of the week.
The douchebag of the week, where we look at the douchiest of the douche. Oh, do not restart the computer right now. Anywho, we look at the douchiest of the douche and pay them their proper respect. So, Shane, what do you got?
All right, this week I got one similar to one you had a couple weeks of somebody who's probably been in the pantheon of douchebaggery and for years now. But, like, I don't know, this week I finally have a platform to speak up against it, and it's just gone to another level. So, who I got this week, and I had a few other contenders that I was actually wavering back and forth, but the recent antics put LeBron James slightly higher than everybody else I had to put there. So my choice is LeBron James. So the guy is probably one of the most gifted, if not the most gifted basketball player ever to live.
Right.
Those will say MJ, those will say not. And there's great arguments on both sides. The game is different. I don't know if you could ever put the two in an apples-to-apples comparison. But what I can tell you is that there is no one that, while Michael Jordan is what Michael Jordan is, the guy was a stone-cold killer, kept to himself, did whatever he did, and made sure everyone was there. LeBron James, on the other hand, is the most self-important person I have ever, like, just witnessed in general. And so when the narrative this last couple weeks happened, there's a couple, let's fast forward a week, or let's backtrack to about a week ago. His team was getting blown out in the first round of the playoffs by the Phoenix Suns. They were down, Anthony Davis got knocked out. They were down 15 points. And then Anthony Davis went hurt. Then he all of a sudden left the court with 5 minutes left to not even care about it. So, like, Jordan would never have done that, because Jordan was the first person to tell you that you're not working hard enough to be there. So that was the first thing that happened. Then they got eliminated. Then they lost the game and they asked him about it. Then they got eliminated and then they asked him about it, and he started talking about Space Jam 2. And then so that was what compounded all of these issues. And then the last thing that really did it is the MVP voting came out yesterday. He got 1/5 place vote. That's the only vote he got in the NBA MVP vote. Mm-hmm. And then so what did he do to bring the narrative back to him? This morning decided to declare, I'm going to change my number again from number 23 to number 6. So that people will then again stop talking about Nikola Djokovic, who is like the highest drafted ever most MVP. Drafted. The guy was... Or the lowest drafted, right. He was number 46 in the draft. They said as they were drafting him, there was a Taco Bell commercial playing as they were running his highlight reel. Mm-hmm. That's how ridiculous it was. So this guy gets it. To take away from that and swing it back to him and talk about everything LeBron James, the dude decides to change his number again. Like, that's going to fix the problem that he has, that he's a pain in the ass, that he's a baby, and that he's, like, if he's not in the center of attention, he's going to do something completely dumb, like pretend he actually reads the book called The Godfather and really just keep the narrative on him. So that is why I am putting, finally, although I finally, like, I've put him in the douchebag of the week for years, douchebag of the century is probably up there for it, but yeah. Today, for this purpose, he is my douchebag of the week.
Okay, well put. It's not as bad as A-Rod announcing he's opting out during the World Series, but it's definitely up there as far as, like, here's this random thing I'm going to announce just after MVP results come out. It's just weird.
Everything he does is like, look at me. Like, his timing is always questionable. And like, it just, it's always got to be about him if it's not about him. And it's like, that's the thing is like, I hate being an old timer and like, get off my yard. Like, I'm an old school guy. But Jordan would never have done that because no one needed to, because everyone knew Jordan was a stone cold killer and you didn't mess with that guy.
Right. You know, if, you know, whenever Jordan didn't win the MVP, he would probably respond by going out and dropping 70 points against the guy that beat him. I mean, he beat Barkley in the finals the year that the year that Barkley won, and he beat Karl Malone in the finals the year that that he won it. So,
but I mean, look at like a guy like Tom Brady, right? I put him in the same category, and I hold him in the same regard of hatred, right?
Absolutely.
But I got to have respect because, like, Tom Brady would never do it. He doesn't care because he knows. Like, he knows he's that good. This guy needs to just be in the conversation at all times, and he's just so – I don't know. It's a problem. So, like, I mean, I got to hold it as a knock.
No, that's fair. Very well point taken. So I'm going to – thanks to a heads up during the show – it's not really a douchebag thing. It's more of a victory lap. I'm gonna lift up the University of South Carolina. And why is that? So the governor of South Carolina is a graduate of the University of South Carolina. And as the conversation continues to evolve around college athletes and name and likeness and whether athletes should be getting paid for it, there's a push on the national level to have a national bill about this. Meanwhile, states are passing their own bills to basically in response to other states so they don't lose the advantage of you can go to this state and these schools and profit off your name and likeness, but you can't here. So South Carolina is the latest school to jump into that with their own bill. Takes effect 2022. Yep. Now, if you're the governor of South Carolina and you want to sign this bill, and you want people to, you want it to be a very public thing, as you want to make sure your schools have a chance at all the athletes, you probably want to do a public bill signing. Now, under most circumstances, you would probably sign it at your alma mater, which is a Power 5 school in the SEC. So, you know, for football, it's the premier football conference, even if the school is not. But
also the only member in the state of South Carolina.
Correct. So you'd probably want to sign it at your alma mater, but not Governor McMaster. Apparently, he's going to be signing the name and likeness bill at Clemson University. So not just another school in the state, but USC's arch nemesis, the rival, or I guess former rival until we've rattled off how many wins in a row in football. But he has no educational connection to the school. He's no degree from there, nothing like that. So the fact that he's told his own alma mater, "Nah, I'm good. I'm gonna go sign it at this bigger school that's been more successful," it just brings joy to my heart. It just,
especially when that alma mater, said alma mater, is in the state capital.
Exactly. It's right down the road. He wouldn't have to go very far. He didn't want to
get hit with crap. He didn't want to get hit with like beer bottles and stuff while they're at the
Yeah. He didn't he could have taken an Uber to the signing if he held it at USC. It's in the same city. But instead, he's gonna drive that whatever 90 minutes, 2 hours to the upstate to sign it at a premier athletic institution. A top 30 public university in the country. And so I really just want to say suck on it, South Carolina, because yet again, Clemson wins. It's beautiful. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
No, bro. I thought you would like that text message mid show.
Yeah, I wasn't going to have one, but after I saw that, I was like, we're going to use this to take a victory lap.
Yeah, I figured you'd like that one when I saw it.
Yeah. So here we are, end of our journey yet again. Thank you to those who stuck with us for the live show. Podcast will be up as soon as it's up. And thank you to those who listen later. We appreciate you. Make sure to go to Very Boy Band Summer to vote on this week's songs. And we'll be back again next week, same time, to run through the next round of the tournament. So he is Shane. I am Mike. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Peace.